They want me to get rid of my dog. Can they do that?
I'm being fined for leaving my garage door open too long.
What are covenants? Do I have any rights?
Help, I feel like I've left the American zone.
If you want the answers to those questions, join me, Shu Bartholomew, and my guests on The Commons every Saturday from 2 to 3 right here on WBR Fairfax Radio. We'll ask the experts and we'll untangle the truth about what's left of our property rights.
On the Commons is a weekly radio show dedicated to discussing the many issues surrounding mandatory membership homeowners associations. Join us as we explore this relatively new world of controlled living, which includes condominiums, cooperatives, and both attached and detached single-family homes. Living in a common ownership development means giving up the American dream. It means giving up your constitutional rights and control over your most valuable asset, your home. Living in a homeowners association means leaving the American zone. This is On the Commons, and I am Shu Bartholomew. Radio Fairfax, and it's kind of fun because today in the studio, I have someone in the studio with me, and I don't normally do that. We're usually a million miles apart, but sitting across from me is a lovely lady whom I have a whole lot of respect for. Her name is Janice Fontel, and Janice sort of the David and Goliath story, well, she's David, because what she did was just absolutely incredible. Janice, thank you so much. It's a rainy, miserable, horrible day in Northern Virginia and Maryland, where you come from. So I want to thank you for driving in all this slush and all the other wonderful stuff to sit in the studio with me and to tell us your story.
It's my privilege and honor to be here, Stu. I really am grateful that you're giving me an opportunity to share my story with many people.
Well, I read your story, and I'm just absolutely in awe of what you've done, because I think that a lot of people would have given up, including myself. I would have thought, oh, this is more trouble than it's worth. So tell us your story. You're obviously not one of the 99.99999% of the happy, happy, happy homeowners that CAI keeps insisting are out there. You're sort of one of the few that isn't so happy.
Yeah, absolutely not. And what I want to do is to let you know, I didn't start off that way. When I purchased my condominium unit back in 2001, I was like most homeowners. I knew that I was moving into an association, but because I had never resided in one previously, I had no idea what that entailed. However, I paid my monthly dues, I acted as a good neighbor, and I carried on my business without any interaction or involvement in my association. And on or around the fall of 2004, I received notification that they were going to increase our rate by $5 a month, and I reached out to the property management company at that time to inquire what constituted the rate increase, and was told that because I did not attend the meetings, I had no right to question their decisions. And I said, well, listen, I pay you your monthly fee every time or month, and I'm just asking because I noticed I had to clear my own sidewalk this past winter. And when I met greater resistance, I then decided to audit the books and records for the association. And at that time, I went to the management company for my condominium association and discovered that there appeared to be what I deem mismanagement of funds. We had contracts that were not paid, overlapping landscaping deals, the telephone services for our sprinkler rooms were intermittently disconnected, the delinquency rate was very high, and that made me think that perhaps I could use my educational and professional skills as an accountant to better and help the association. I offered to become a treasurer for the association and the management company for my condominium association, and the board of directors at that point said no. They told me that I could wait until the following year and run for one of the board positions. which is what I did in November of 2004. I ran as president of the Condominium Association and was elected by a large number, and thus began my full awareness of what it's like to be in an association, but most importantly, what it's like when you are caught in the crosshairs mm-hmm. of an association. As I said, I have a condominium unit, which makes me a member of a condominium association, but my condominium association is a member of a larger umbrella organization, the HOA.
Lucky you. You've got two of them, huh?
We have two. And so while the condominium association is quite small, there's only 36 members, there's a very large HOA where we have approximately 536 members. From 1999 through 2005, the HOA imposed the following payment arrangement for the 36 condo owners. We combined the monthly dues owed to both associations in one check that was payable to our condo association. So in effect, the HOA made our condominium association its collection agent. After the condo collected the money from us, they then in turn designated the management group associates to collect the money from the condo association. So I would write my check for hypothetically $150. A portion of that would be designated for the HOA dues, and the management group associate was responsible for collecting that portion owed to the HOA directly from my condominium association.
I want to stop you here. Number one, the management company, they're credentialed by CAI, right?
They're a member of CAI, but the individual property manager, Todd Hassett, is certified by and credentialed by CAI, yes.
Okay, credentialed. Because we're always told that, you know, if you had professional managers, that these things wouldn't happen, these problems wouldn't happen. And it sounds like you've run into just about every single horror story, problem, mismanagement that you can. But one thing you said that I found extremely interesting is that the condo was a collection agent for the HOA.
Yes. And that should not...
I just wanted to highlight that the condo was a collection or is a collection agent for the HOA, because that will be important later on in your story, won't it?
Yes. And that should not have been if the HOA was following its governing documents. In order for that arrangement to have legal effect, there must have been a corporate resolution between the two boards of directors stating that they will agree to this. And that never occurred. There was never a resolution between the board of directors for the HOA and the board of directors for the condo association giving legal credibility to that arrangement. It was something that was arbitrary, where the management group just on a whim capriciously began sending monthly invoices to our condominium association for their payment. They never invoiced the individual condo owners. They did not track the payments that were being made by the individual condo owners to the condominium association.
Janice, when you ran for the board, you ran for the condo board and not the HOA board, right?
Correct.
Okay.
And my term began January of 2005. Towards February of 2005, I received a telephone call from Todd Hassett, who works with the HOA's management company, the Management Group Associates. He advised me that he had been in prior discussions with the condominium board in regards to a debt that he stated the association owed the HOA. And I told him I was not aware of any of this, had never heard about a debt, really didn't even understand the relationship between the two associations, but I would look into it. And he gave me background information, and the background information was that the management group associates had failed to invoice and collect the correct amounts of assessments from January through October of 2003. And as a result of their billing error, it produced a shortfall of $8,521.50.
And this is over a period of how long?
10 months in January, according to them.
Oh, and okay, so it was a period of 10 months that you owed them.
Or yes.
They alleged there was a shortfall.
Correct. And since at that time, our condominium association had a little over $8,000 in the bank, I, in good conscience, could not have authorized depleting our financial assets and resources to cover a billing error where I had no frame of reference, no background, no paperwork on. And so I said to him, listen, let me check into it, and then I'll get back to you. But apparently, I was not moving fast enough for him.
So why did they wait 10 months before letting you know that there was an error? And whose error was it?
Well, it was the management group's error. They were responsible. The management group associates is the property management company for the HOA.
For the HOA. So it was their error.
Correct.
Okay.
They made the error. And according to him, when they discovered the error in December the 15th of 2003, they sent a letter with an invoice to the condominium association. And in 2005, he told me that, again, he had conversations with the previous condo board members, and they failed to pay, and that they wanted us to pay he wanted me to pay the money on behalf of the association now. I declined to do so without an investigation to confirm the accuracy or validity of what he was stating. And what I did was I went back and I audited the bank statements for the condo association, and I said I saw that there was a check paid on May the 19th of 2004, payable to the HOA in the exact amount he claimed we owed, which was $8,521.50. And I went back to the HOA and I said, there must be an error because here's check number 775 payable to you in the amount of $8,521.50 that you cashed on May the 19th, 2004. And at that point, I was told by Mr. Hassett that I was wrong.
And even though you had a copy of the canceled check?
I didn't have the copy of the canceled check at that time. I just had details of the canceled check. I was able to obtain that information from looking at the actual bank account statements. And so at that point, he insisted that I was not telling the truth, and subsequently began sending collection notices to the individual condominium owners. And he started in March the 17th of 2005, sending a letter to everyone telling us that if the condominium association did not pay this delinquency, they would proceed with legal action and the filing of liens against our property, as well as the revocation of our community privileges.
Did they have the authority to revoke that? I mean, a lot of governing documents that I've seen will say that, you know, they can revoke it for a period no more than for non-payment. But it sounds like you call them privileges. I'm not sure they are privileges since it's something you're buying, but you're paying for it. It's not a privilege. And they're revoking it indefinitely.
Correct.
And do they have that authority?
The way that the HOA governing documents were written, it was open-ended. So for non-payment of assessments, they can revoke your access to the community amenities. And that's what they did. And so subsequently, Mr. Hassett began to mobilize a group of condominium owners against me. And they would literally speak to other condo owners in the community and tell them that I did not know what I was doing, that because of my decisions, they were at risk of losing their homes, that they would be subject to foreclosures, wage garnishments, bank account garnishments, liens recorded against their properties. And it escalated to where he was helping them unseat me as a board member. One member in particular had filed a complaint against me with the Commission on Common Ownership Community Okay,
I know what that is, but let's tell our listeners, because we have listeners from around the world, what the Commission on Common Ownership is.
Yes, in Montgomery County, Maryland, our county council decided to create an organization like an ombudsman that would resolve disputes between homeowner and condominium association members and their associations. And basically, at that time, you go ahead and file a complaint and pay a nominal fee, and they will go and set up a hearing so that they could bring the sides together to resolve the complaint. It's like a quasi-judicial proceeding. You don't go before a magistrate or a judge. You're basically going before a panel. And there's a three-person panel. One person would be a member of the property management industry. Another person would be a member of the legal community. And the third member is supposed to represent Joe Blow, the average homeowner. And so the panel that we have listened to the issue between me and our association, and I was a little disappointed in my experience with them because there was no due diligence. One of the issues that uncovered after they issued a finding and a memorandum was that the panel chair who presided over our hearing actually represented associations who were managed by the property management company for my HOA. So that was a little disappointing to know. And I did, to the best of my ability, write letters and complaining about that because I felt that that should have been disclosed to me up front because I believe that there was an inherent conflict of interest. If you have the person who is receiving professional and financial services and have a contract with the management company that manages the HOA that is subject to the complaint. But again, it went nowhere because a lot of times I think that people who go before the Commission on Common Ownership Communities are not aware that there is no due diligence.
They're not, and I think that this is nothing more than a placebo just to make people feel good that there is somewhere to go. But in essence, what you found out, that these typically they just are not there for the homeowner. They're not going to offer you the protections. And they're not being run by competent people.
Yeah.
Ethical, competent, knowledgeable people. I mean, even the homeowner representative on all of these boards, you know, they're more industry and abusive than anything you could ever find in the industry.
Well, Shu, you bring up a wonderful point because one of the things that came up in the subsequent litigation lawsuits that I filed in the U.S. District Court for the District of Maryland and the Circuit Court of Maryland for Montgomery County is that people don't realize how difficult it can be for a homeowner who's actually in a legal battle against an association. I live in a county where every community built at the 1987 has to become incorporated as an association, which means you have people who are working in behind the scenes and these court offices, administration, judges, law clerks, case managers who may live in an association. And depending on what their role is and what their level of involvement and understanding and their experience in an association, it may color the delivery of services that they're providing to the public, you know, particularly in these cases. And so I think that for me, that was an eye-opener. That was something as I got more involved that I started actually being analytical and thinking about what's going on behind these scenes and how it could either work to my detriment or work to my benefit. But at any rate, in my experience, I certainly could not account for the level of unfairness that I had received in those lawsuits.
I think, and I'm glad you're pointing that out because so many people will look at Montgomery County, they'll look at Virginia, they'll look at the handful of states that have these so-called oversight things and think, oh, they're so lucky, we want one. And I go, no, you don't. You don't want one of these things because they're just going to throw you under the bus. I mean, that's what they're there for. Right. You think you got your day in court? No, you did not.
Well, ultimately, what happened was when I made an offer to settle the $8,521.50 debt, only because it was causing such friction and division within our small condominium community, that I offered to pay $4,389 towards it just to settle it, even though the association was not legally responsible for it. But by then, the management company and Tom Hassett were so determined to humiliate me, not to work with me, they denied the offer. And when they denied to accept the offer, they then decided to divide that amount by 36, which is the number of condo owners, and they charge each one of us a one-time fee of $236.71. Initially, Mr. Hassett stated that that one-time charge was a special assessment. And I went back and looked at our bylaws, and I said, no, wait 1 second. Under our governing documents, special assessments can only be imposed for capital improvements, mm-hmm. and the payment of a billing error debt does not qualify as a capital improvement. And he, at that point, they decide to retract the special assessment. And I then, thinking I would get justice and recourse at the Commission on Common Ownership Community, filed a complaint with them. And that's how we, our matter ended up before the commission, is because they were labeling that charge as a special assessment and it violated our bylaws.
We're talking to Janice Fontel. Janice lives in Maryland, and she has run into just about all of the horrors that anybody else who's had problems with their HOAs, condominiums, knows about. And believe it or not, everybody involved has been credentialed by CAI. You know, these are the people they tell you you have to hire because they know what they're doing. They're the professionals. This is how well they know their job. Go ahead, Janice.
Well, of course, as I said, the hearing before the Commission on Common Ownership Communities did not result in the victory for the Condominium Association. They stated that the management group had made a billing error in 2003, that their billing error resulted in a shortfall of $8,521.50, and that it was never paid by our condominium association, and that the property management company had worked tirelessly to resolve it to no avail, and that they had every right to collect the $236.71 from us. Well, most of my neighbors paid. Out of the 36 condo owners, 33 paid. One left the community. The other one went into delinquency, and then there was me. I didn't pay it. I refused to pay it. I paid January of 2006. The management group became the collection agent for the HOA. So no longer was my condominium association responsible for collecting their assessments. The management group was collecting the assessments from us directly. And I paid every month on time the regular assessments that were charged from 2006 all the way to the present. And on or around April of 2006, I started receiving notice of intent to create lien letters. And I ignored them because I didn't know any money. So I didn't pay him any attention.
This was personally to you or to everybody in the association?
It was to me.
It was personally to you?
Yes. And I ignored them. So from April of 2006 until May of 2008, I received approximately 6 letters threatening to record liens against my home. In June of 2008, I learned the management company, the management group associates, in the name of Jeff Gantling, who is the CEO and owner, had actually recorded a lien against my condominium unit for $751.91. A month later, I received a letter from the HOA's attorney, Torin K. Andrews, with the Andrews and Lawrence Law Group, advising me that they were going to file a suit to foreclose on my property. 2 months after that, they filed a lawsuit in the district court for Montgomery County, Maryland, to collect $1,363.95 from me. Perhaps in February of 2010, they filed a second lien against me for the same debt for $3,963.95.
And this all started with your $200 and some alleged debt. I mean, the one that you really didn't owe.
Right.
But
that $236.71 had ballooned into $3,963.95. And when you look at it, look at the aggregate collection actions that they had taken. They were coming after me for thousands of dollars, not just, you know, when you add that $751.91, the $1,393.95 for the small claims case, the amount that was on the attorney letter threatening to foreclose on my home, when you add them together, it was close to 10 grand, you know, at 10 grand. So I was speaking with my real estate agent and telling her that I had received the summons and complaint for this lawsuit in March of 2010. Apparently, they were unable to serve me with the papers because we had a home in North Carolina, so I was moving back and forth. So when I received a copy of the complaint and summons on my doorstep, I was speaking with my real estate agent because I was interested in selling the condominium unit, and I told her what was going on, and she had her title people do a title search on my condo, and that's when I discovered that they had these two liens on my property. And so at that point, I decided, listen, it's time for me to get involved, and now I have to fight back. And because it was small claims and everybody said small claims is real easy, you know, you could represent yourself. When we had the trial on May the 27th of 2010, the property manager, Todd Hassett, was the sole witness for the HOA. Mm-hmm. They submitted evidence into the court that stated the money was the result of this billing error that they made back in 2003. So when it came time for me to present a defense, at that point, I had a copy of the canceled check. I had already subpoenaed the bank for that information, and I gave a copy of the canceled check to the judge and said, this is why I did not pay it, because it was not due. It was not owing. Here's a copy of the canceled check. And the judge, without any explanation, issued a judgment against me for $1,330.71.
Did he explain why? No, nothing? Just
no. Yes. What he did tell me was, he said, Ms. Fontel, it's only $236.71. Why didn't you just pay it? And I said to him, Your Honor, if I owed the money, I certainly would have paid it because that's what I do. But I am not in the habit of paying the same debt twice. And that's when he said, judgment for the plaintiff in the amount of $1,330.71 and authorized them to file a third lien against me. Perhaps at that point, I was thoroughly disappointed. However,
I would have been furious.
Yes.
But I would have been, I wouldn't have been disappointed. I would have been incensed.
But, you know, sometimes, Shu, you have to think with a clear head. I was hurt. And I'm not going to lie, I was devastated. I looked at him in disbelief. But at the same time, I knew I had the right to appeal. And so I went through the process of filing the appropriate appeal. And we did go back to court in October of 2010. But this time I got smarter. See, my argument wasn't whether or not the payment had been made or, you know, if it was owed. My argument was, it was related to a billing error made in 2003. They filed the lawsuit in September of 2008. In Maryland, the statute of limitations for this type of a claim is 3 years. That at the time they filed their lawsuit against me to collect it, the statute of limitations had already expired. And the judge agreed with me, and she dismissed their complaint.
So you won one, Janice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But Shu, the HOA, being the wonderful people that they are, they filed an appeal to the Maryland Court of Special Appeals. And I then responded to their appeal by saying, you guys do not have jurisdiction to hear this appeal. We went back and forth for a couple of months, and the Court of Special Appeals agreed with me. They then filed an appeal with the highest court in the state of Maryland, the Court of Appeals, and the Court of Appeals declined to hear, to grant their petition and hear the appeal. So that ended their collection actions against me. But one of the things that I want...
Did they remove the liens?
Well, yes, they did it intermittently because the attorney who filed the largest lien against me, I ended up filing a complaint against them with the Maryland Attorney Grievance Commission and the Maryland State's Attorney Office. And the reason why I did that was because by law, you have to attest to your personal knowledge and belief that the information on the statement of lien is accurate and true and correct. And he did that. And then I said, well, here's copies of my canceled check. So obviously, I never owed $3,963.95. So you either perjured yourself deliberately, or it's just an example of their lack of understanding of the basic fundamentals of debt collection or collection activities on behalf of the associations. And so he involuntarily released that lien. But the problem was, when he released the lien, he wrote that it was fully paid and satisfied, which means if you were to do a title search of my home, you'll see the original lien document and you'll see his release. And because of the way the release was worded, it implies that I owed the money and I paid it, which was not the case at all. The other thing is with the first lien that Jeff Gantling with the Management Group Associate filed against my home, it took about 3 years for him to remove that lien. And he did after I filed a complaint against him with the Maryland Attorney Grievance Commission. And my complaint against the owner of the management company was that they were engaged in the unlicensed practice of law. In Maryland, and anyone preparing and filing lien documents in Maryland courts must have a license to practice law unless they are in one of the exemptive classes, like a title clerk, a escrow clerk, settlement attorney, things of that nature, which he does not. So unbeknownst to me when I filed that complaint, I had no clue what that meant to the industry. I just did it because I knew that he wasn't an attorney, and he filed a lien against my real estate, my property. But when I received the cease and desist letter from the Maryland Grievance Commission, I heard through their attorney that it sent ripples throughout the entire property management industry in the state of Maryland, that for decades, property management companies, many of them have been preparing and filing lien documents against homeowners' homes on behalf of their homeowner and condominium associations. I got access to the land record system, and I tried just to start printing them off. We're talking hundreds, thousands of liens. And he had been doing this for up to 15 years. And for each lien, he was charging homeowners a very substantial rate.
How much was it, you know?
For that $751.91 lien he filed against my property, $355 constituted his fee.
Wow. Times
thousands.
Over 15. Oh, my gosh.
I was livid at that point. I contacted.
Finally. Finally, Janice.
Well, you know, the thing is that now I'm thinking not just for me, but what about all these other homeowners?
I know.
These liens are active.
Yes.
They're still on the books. And even though everyone now knows he was engaged in the unlicensed practice of law and that those liens were illegal, no one has done anything to vacate those liens. And my guess is because the practice was so widespread and commonplace that they know it will basically decimate many of these cottage companies, management companies that sprung up as a result of the proliferation of these associations. I went to the Maryland Attorney General's office, the Division of Consumer Protection, the state elective officials, I try to get drum up support for a bill to outlaw these practices, but no one wanted to touch it. No one wanted to touch it at all. And to my, you know, later we'll go into the federal lawsuit, but one of the things I tried to get the Fourth Circuit Court of Appeals to do was to issue a favorable ruling in my federal lawsuit stating that the preparation and filing of lien documents without a license to practice law constitute a violation of the federal and state debt collection laws. I was not successful in doing that.
There have been a lot of cases where the associate or, you know, management companies and attorneys have lost in the Fair Debt Collection Practices Act lawsuits. I don't know why yours didn't.
But I could tell you why. Because my case, the two lawsuits that I filed were cases of first impression, meaning I was the first homeowner in the state of Maryland to file a debt collection lawsuit against an HOA and a property management company alleging that they were engaged in unlicensed collection actions, the unlicensed practice of law, and violations of other statutes, including the Maryland Condominium Act. I tried, before I filed the lawsuit, after I lost the first small claims case, I went out into the community and I started contacting attorneys, asking them to represent me for my appeal. But also I was explaining to them that, listen, this is the type, their business mix. These are the statutes. And this is how they're violating federal and state statutes. I spoke to approximately 20 attorneys between Montgomery, Howard, Prince George, and Baltimore County. Nobody wanted to represent me. No one. I reached out to the Consumer Protection Clinics at the University of Maryland School of Law, the University of Baltimore School of Law, American University, and the Legal Aid Bureau. I could not get anyone to represent me. And so I ended up representing myself. And as a pro se litigant before the U.S. District Court in the District of Maryland and the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Fourth Circuit, I found that they were very hostile to me as a result of the disclosures that I was making and the arguments that that I had and my ability to put together an argument and support it with consumer protection statutes and evidence using the books and records. Really, that's the books and records from the management group associates. I used the deposition testimony from the owner who often, you know, talked about how, you know, if he had to collect the debt, that unless the person fell from the ends of the earth, he was going to do everything he could to collect that debt, even if it, you know, made the financials look bad for the association. I used their words, their deposition testimony, their books and records, their letters, their correspondence to support everything that I said. And I think what happened was I was very thorough, very detailed. And as I said, I documented everything with clear and convincing evidence. Instead of gaining justice, I gained the anger and resentment.
They don't like it when homeowners know what they're doing. They don't like it when homeowners are well organized because they aren't typically. And I've heard from homeowners who have saved every piece of paper that they've ever got. And they had it all neatly filed and neatly organized, and they've gone to court pro se. And the attorney for the association, once they've seen that they have all of this documentation, that they have evidence to support their facts, have non-suited the case and left because they knew that they were going to look like idiots. Because they just, I mean, some of these attorneys, Janice, they take on hundreds, like you said, hundreds and hundreds of clients. They don't know the ins and outs of every association. They don't know the details of all of this stuff. I mean, they just assume big picture. But when you have someone who's actually done their homework and actually has documentation to support their allegations, all of a sudden it's like, oh, we're just going to non-suit this and hope nobody realizes that we've made such a big boo-boo. But they're not that good. They really are not that good, Janice.
Well, they almost succeeded because in April of 2012, Judge Alexander Williams, he dismissed my entire federal lawsuit. But unbeknownst to him, at that time, I had written about 100 letters. And I wrote everybody I could think of, homeowner, consumer protection advocates, nonprofit organizations, the Federal Trade Commission, the Bureau of Consumer Financial Protection, the Department of Justice, the federal and state elective offices, whoever sat on the committee, they received a letter from me. And one of my letters ended up in the hands of someone on the Federal Reserve Bank. And they forwarded to the Office of Financial Regulation for the state of Maryland. And when I told them that he had dismissed my lawsuit by misquoting the Maryland Consumer Agency Licensing Act, they were fearful that this bad law he was about to create would, again, undermine Maryland basic law that says if you are collecting debts on behalf of another person, and you are not the original creditor, you must obtain a state-issue license to collect those debts. And the management company, which had been in business since 1987, had never obtained a license to collect debts. And most of the property management companies in the state of Maryland, likewise, had never obtained a license to collect debts. And so the Office of Financial Regulation submitted a friend of the court brief in my case, and said to the judge, listen, you got it wrong, you know, for the Maryland Collection Agency Licensing Act, and also suggested that he reinstate my claim against the Homeowner Association for their filing of the time-barred lawsuit against me. The judge agreed with them in regards to the licensing requirement, but he refused to reverse his finding regarding the dismissal of the HOA. So here you have someone from the Maryland Attorney General's office saying, listen, ignorance of the law is no excuse for filing a lawsuit after the 3-year statute of limitations had expired. And a judge saying, no, not going to do it, not going to do it. And he, at one point, issued a finding of liability against the management company for unlicensed collection activities in violation of the Maryland Consumer Debt Collection Act and the Maryland Consumer Protection Act. But then he told them, hey, write a motion to alter and amend this judgment and ask me to remove the two individuals from the lawsuit, Todd Hassett and Jeff Gantling. And when he did that, again, I was thinking, what must I do to get fairness? Because no one has been advising me what to do of a legal nature throughout this whole process. And I went and I complained, but I also responded to it because in this, the way that the statute is written, if you are collecting debts in your personal right and you are working for an unlicensed collection agency, you must get a license to protect yourself. And since those individuals did not have a license to collect debts in their personal right, they too were found liable for my damages under the Maryland Consumer Debt Collection Act and the Maryland Consumer Protection Act. And again, that was, in both instances, it was the first time a Maryland court has issued a finding against the company and or individual employees of that company alleging that if you are collecting debts without the Maryland state license, you're in violation of the consumer debt collection and the consumer protection laws.
You actually got a settlement on that, didn't you?
Yes, we went to trial. We went to trial, and I'm not going to, you know, bore you with the roadblocks that was placed in my path for the trial. But I requested a jury trial, and the jury awarded me $25,000. With the damages. And that too was wonderful because when in my research, it's very rare for a debt collection lawsuit to proceed to trial. Normally, the attorneys settle. Mm-hmm. But because no one thought that a non-lawyer such as myself, who had no formal legal training, would be able to take it that far, we ended up going to trial. And the settlement that I received was much larger than any settlement that most homeowners would get. Actually, the interesting thing, after the finding a liability was established, some of the lawyers who didn't want to represent me in the beginning reached out to me.
Oh, really?
And offered their legal services, yes.
Oh.
Yeah, they wanted to represent me for the trial. And I had one.
After you actually won it, say thanks, but no thanks, yeah?
Yeah, they wanted to collect 40% of whatever I was given plus costs. And my response was, you know, I thank you very much. I really appreciate it, but I think I'm going to ride this horse all the way through solo.
Wow. Now, that tells you a lot about these attorneys, doesn't it? Once you've done the work, they want 40% plus costs, and you won the case, and now they want to help you?
And that's with them telling me that, at best, the most that I could expect to get would be about $10,000.
You know, one thing that amazes me is you're talking about this, and you're telling me your story, and I don't know, I wasn't there. But the impression that I'm getting is that you were very meticulous. You were very sort of looked at the points, but you don't seem to have become emotional.
No, and you can't at this point, because that's when you make mistakes. In other words, everything, I wrote everything, my briefs, my filings in the third person. I didn't make it personal. I spoke to myself as the plaintiff, for example, or I used my last name, Fontel. I didn't get personal at this point, because the other thing is, I saw it as a divine mission, a divine purpose. It was no longer about me. It was about protecting everybody who came behind me. It was about educating, informing, and empowering other homeowners so that they will not have to put up with this stuff, that they would have a body of law that they could refer to fight back and protect their property rights. Because people are losing their homes throughout this country.
Oh, absolutely, which is why I'm in here right now, and every week, every Tuesday, I come in here and talk to people, because I want people to be empowered like you, to protect their property rights, because Lord knows the people that we've elected and put in charge of running this country are not doing a good job. I mean, look at the problems you had. I mean, even the attorneys. I'm just gobsmacked at how unethical they would be, that once you've actually won the case, they would come and want to share in your spoils. I mean, come on. What kind of people? And this is no reflection, because I know some really, really good attorneys who have done a lot of good and who've taken on a lot of pro bono cases and helped homeowners. But evidently, you didn't run into any of those.
No, actually, I did.
You did?
Yes, now I did. And you would be surprised. There were attorneys that I called, and they would encourage me. They wouldn't represent me, but they would encourage me. They would steer me in the right direction by way of reaching out to another individual, organization, or entity. One of the first attorneys I spoke to, because Torrin K. Andrews was refusing to release that large lien against my home, and she said to me, you know, I can't help you, but put the pressure on him. Put the pressure on him and make him release that lien. And that's when I contacted the Maryland Attorney Grievance Commission. And as soon as I did that and filed the complaint with the state's attorney's office, he did. He released the lien. He released the lien. So there are people in the community who were supportive, but it's almost like they don't want to be public. You know, they don't want to have to place a face with their support and their encouragement, because it's been a very contentious and difficult 6 years. You know, they began collecting this money from me in March of 2005. Here we are in August of 2014, and the lawsuits are still going on. One of the things that did devastate me was when I learned that Mr. Andrews had obtained copies of my credit report. I was floored at that point because I had no idea that my homeowner association was receiving copies of credit reports on its members. The attorney had obtained money judgment. One day, I ordered a copy of my credit report. As a Maryland resident, we could do so. We're entitled to one free credit report every year. So I ordered a copy of my credit report. And something said, just look to see who was inquiring. I personally had not applied for any credit, but I did. And I saw this name, National Recovery and Investigations. And I didn't recognize it, but I recognized the address. And the address was the exact same address for the attorney. And I just stared because I couldn't believe it. It's like, no, he did not get copies of my credit report. Not once, twice. Did it twice. And so I went on the State Department of Assessment and Taxation to find out information about this National Recovery and Investigations. And lo and behold, Torin K. Andrews, the partner in Andrews and Lawrence Law Group, owns a collections agency called Debt Assistance Group, and that collection agency is authorized to use a trade name, National Recovery and Investigations. And so that resulted in my second lawsuit in the Circuit Court of Montgomery County, Maryland. And again, I was unaware that this case would be the case of first impression. The last lawsuit in Maryland Circuit Court involving an illegal credit inquiry was back in 1997. And so here I come saying, listen, this attorney illegally has been obtaining copies of homeowners' credit reports for years without a permissible purpose under the Fair Credit Reporting Act. And the reason why I said he didn't have a permissible purpose, because the HOA and condo associations are not defined as creditors under the Fair Credit Reporting Act. Our assessments do not constitute the statutory definition of credit, and our accounts do not meet the statutory definition of an account. So just because they obtained a money judgment against the homeowner does not legally entitle them the right to get copies of our credit report without our prior knowledge, consent, and written permission. And that then just blew up. It blew up because, again, no one expected me to make the arguments, and that they ruled against me because at this point, I think the judges were saying, you know what, we're tired of her. We're sick of you. We're going to shut this down. I have been threatened. One judge told me, Ms. Fontel, because you won in a federal case, let this go. Let this go.
Why do they want to keep letting it go? Because what is wrong with them?
Because they will much rather protect the financial, legal, professional interests of the perpetrator of the crime. Because that's under the criminal code, as opposed to protecting the interests, the legal rights and interests of the homeowner who is representing herself. And so,
you've still got another case going. You're not through yet, are you?
No. This is still pending because they dismissed my case. And I then filed an appeal, and the appeal was dismissed, but it was dismissed because the court had prepared a chronology of the court filings that did not represent the actual court record. So that the order that I had a right to appeal from, they omitted that. It's as if it didn't exist. And so I've gone back to them and said, wait a minute, you know, you forgot to include the most recent order that was dated March the 6th of 2014. That's the order that entitles me to appellate review under Maryland rules. And you need to reinstate my appeal as a result of that. And so that is pending. But I don't know, Chu, I am sitting there every day. I want to see what level of obstacle, what distortion of fact, what misrepresentation of the rule that they're going to use to deny the appeal, because they know now that if I go forward with the appeal and if they enforce the law, that I would be victorious, because it is very clear under the Fair Credit Reporting Act, the terms and definitions are unambiguous. These people had no permissible purpose under the federal law to get copies of our credit report.
Janice, we're out of time, but I want you to please keep in touch with us, and I want you to come back and tell us what happened. I'm sitting here waiting to hear the rest of the story, as Paul Harvey would say. Thank you so much for telling us, and good luck.
And thank you very much for having me, Sue, and thank you very much for the wonderful work that you're doing and just keeping, again, homeowners informed and educated and empowered. So I really appreciate the work you're doing.
Thank you.
Please check out our website at onthecommons.us. On the Commons is produced by OTC Multimedia Productions.
Well, I finally bought my dream home to enjoy retirement life. I've made new friends and buddies, lots of parties for my wife. It seemed that life was perfect, all my neighbors felt the same. Then along came death by CCRs, life's over, I'm fair game. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Now there's lots of open meetings close to Justice for HO. Those arrogant board members say what they want you to know. The CAI and ULI will help you lose it all. But I wouldn't sell that dream home yet, the writing's on the wall. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Well, we're not afraid or stupid, all your threats mean nothing here. Time marches on, soon you'll be gone, united we'll be there. So put your rules and CCRs up where the sun don't shine, and enjoy those precious golden years, stop messing around with mine. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell.